speakers for EMU's MLK Day Academic Programs Conference, Ash Gott and Dr. Sadaf Ali, give listeners a preview of their programs aimed to educate about various topics related to racism. These range from the first leaders of the Stonewall Riots being queer trans people of color to discussing how Black and Asian Americans are portrayed in visual media. I'm Kayla Trefill, and this is the Eastern Echo Podcast. Ash Gott is the graduate assistant of the LGBT Resource Center. Their program is titled, The First Pride Was a Riot. The fight for equality started with queer trans people of color, and the fight still continues. This program talks about the presence of queer trans folks of color and how their leadership has paved the fight for equality, beginning with the Stonewall Riots of 1969.
So back in 1969, the bars were the only places that queer folk or those of the LGBTQ plus community could hang out and be safe. And in 1969, there's a Stonewall bar in, or it's the Stonewall Inn in New York City. And it was owned by the mafia back in the day. And the mafia would pay off police who would commonly raid bars for those that were committing homosexual acts or was cross-dressing or not, you know, those things where they weren't understanding of transgender folks either. And in 1969, the police still decided to raid the Stonewall Inn, even though the mafia had been paying them off for so long to keep them away. And in that raid, queer folks were so tired of, you know, having to put up with this discrimination and oppression that they decided to fight back. And so we had several leaders in that movement, which were women of color. And I think that's a powerful thing to include in today's piece of a fight for equality, to know that people of color have been in the queer community as well, fighting for this for more than just their race.
They state that being discriminated against by the world around them for years took a toll, and so they fought back.
In a way, I don't know exactly like the purpose as to why it's been people of color paving the way, except for those are the resilient fighters that we've had for so long, and white folks, even if they are, you know, gay, bi, whatever it is, they still have white privilege in that space. So those who are of color have multiple marginalized identities, therefore they're the ones that are oppressed so much more, therefore they're the ones that have been fighting. And I feel for this presentation in general, me being a very obviously white person giving this presentation, it's kind of to take that framework of, look, our, you know, queer elders or people of color fighting for this, they are the mainly oppressed people. Why aren't we doing anything?
How do you think dealing with marginalization is impacted, I guess, if you have more multiple marginalized, or if you are more marginalized than your peers? Like, do you think that has like any sort of impact? Or do you think it's just like, because you're marginalized, you just want to push?
I think there's this factor of you think about it like anything that's like a stick where it bends until it breaks. And I feel like those with marginalized identities particularly have been pushed for so long at this point. We've made progress, but we need to make so much more.
Why is remembering these events still important today?
I think there's an importance there when we think about back in those days we had, you know, these women of color, trans women of color that were there that fought for this. And I think it's one of those things where it's important that we recognize that like these folks that were so severely marginalized that were homeless, and they ended up like, so there were two particular women that like I'm referring to, and that's Sylvia Rivera and Marsha P. Johnson, which we also have Stormé Delaverey, but we don't mention her as often. But with particularly Sylvia Rivera and Marsha P. Johnson starting even STAR afterwards of having this place for homeless youth, it's showing that they did the work of fighting for equality and they continue to do the work to help youth. And that's kind of what I feel like the drive is now of what I would like to do as a person and what I feel like the community needs to do is to stand up for that equality piece and honor what they did and to show that they still gave back even after fighting for so long, that it's our turn to do that now.
Now going forward, how can we like continue to like carry on their legacy?
It takes a tribe at this point. Like it takes a community to be able to come together for this. It can't just be one person. And I think for the purpose of my presentation, it's kind of a crash course in white supremacy for white people that don't get it yet. And it's a piece of helping them understand that, you know, all these things are intermingled, especially with like white queer folks in general. you may sometimes think that you're exempt from racism because it's like, well, I'm marginalized too, therefore, what do I have to do here? And as someone who is a white queer person, that's like, actually, no, you don't do that at all. You are here to stand up for others. It's this piece where we're seeing that those of color have been fighting this fight. And I have a very like big disclaimer in my presentation to say, like, I'm white. I'm not speaking for people of color in this presentation. I'm speaking because they have their own voices that deserve to be lifted. Something that I also want to talk about that I included within the presentation is kind of action items for folks. So it's not just, I'm not going to scream information at people, is that you make it like an activity to help them understand, but then you also create a to-do list of like, these are the things that you can do. And one of the final things on the list that I think is important to mention at all times in life is that you shouldn't expect a cookie whenever you get it right. And that's with any marginalized identity. I wanted to speak out about that because it's not just people of color that experience that. It's trans folks also really experience that with misgendering and dead naming. And I think that's something that I kind of just like to scream out to the world of, like, you cannot be a performative ally. You have to be a true ally. And if you're screaming that you're an ally, that's not what you are.
Another presenter at the MLK Academic Programs Conference is Dr. Sadaf Ali, a professor of digital media at EMU's School of Communication, Media, and Theater Arts. Her program is called Framing Race and Ethnicity: Depictions of Black and Non-Black People of Color in the News Media. She discusses how Black American and Asian American individuals are perceived in visual media in the United States, considering how media framing impacts both Black and non-Black people of color.
So media framing, it was actually developed by Robert Edmond, who's a researcher who studies media. And the idea of framing is to make certain aspects of your text salient when communicating something. So, or making certain aspects of perceived reality more salient. So the idea of salience is to make things more noticeable. So a really great example would be like, if you ask the average American, what do you think of Africa? What does Africa like mean to you? You'll get a lot of comments like the flies in the eyes, the distended belly, all the poverty, that type of thing. Well, that isn't all of Africa. Maybe that's parts of it, but not necessarily all of Africa. Another example might be something like, when you think of the Middle East, what do you think of? People, of course, will say things like oppression and terrorism and women covered head to toe and guys with machine guns. Again, that's not all of the Middle East, but when you ask people like what they think of that, those are the images that we're seeing in our own news media. So oftentimes in our media, we'll see like African Americans depicted as criminals and Asian Americans depicted as hardworking and sort of, you know, that concept of the model minority. What I'm going to talk about in my research is looking at, especially in the context of like COVID and crime and in general, the way we depict Asian Americans versus Black Americans. So this concept of the model minority really was developed as a way to denigrate Black Americans. And what people generally don't understand is that despite the fact that they're both minority groups and they've both been discriminated against, the type of discriminations that Asian Americans have had in this country isn't necessarily the same as what African Americans have dealt with. African Americans deal with regularly with systemic racism and systemic issues that has really kept them, I don't want to say kept them, but has caused significant different types of issues. There's disparities that you don't see necessarily in Asian American populations. And so the news media tends to focus on this fact that, and it's not necessarily across the board, but oftentimes we'll see that, look at Asians, they're pulling themselves up by their bootstraps and they're really making a go of it, and they're really living the American dream. And look at African Americans, they're just not doing it. They're just not competing. At the same time, ignoring all the different aspects of racism, and at the same time, ignoring the fact that not all Asian Americans are living the model minority dream, the American dream. There's quite a lot of poverty within Asian Americans because not all Asian Americans are the same. It creates one monolithic group, and we know that there's Asian Americans from certain countries that come in that are more poverty stricken, that don't have the same levels of education. A lot of it traces back to like issues of like immigration. When the United States opened the doors for Asians, they were specifically looking for Asians that were highly educated. So they were automatically walking in the door with more privilege than African Americans who came to this country as slaves hundreds of years ago.
As the old saying goes, a picture is worth a thousand words. In the media, visuals are shown in newspapers, magazines, articles, and on social media, and they can be viewed over and over again. When used to reinforce racial stereotypes, they become normalized.
When you see depictions of crime on news media, often you will see consistently African-Americans being arrested for crime or being arrested for whatever it is, you know? Whereas you don't necessarily see that happening in Asian, for within Asian-Americans. Now things are changing because of the pandemic, because of COVID, and because we have a president who is refers to the COVID-19 as the China virus. So we're starting to see some of those shifting, but again, not the same as we would see images of African-Americans within this country. A lot of the research I look at also looks at how like Asians and African-Americans are depicted during crisis, during disaster, natural disasters. And I did a comparison of like Hurricane Katrina images. And oftentimes I found that African-Americans were depicted as victims, people that were just waiting for help, in abject poverty. Whereas the comparison that I drew was from the 2010 floods in Pakistan, where Pakistanis are South Asians. And we're seeing them, you know, sandbagging their homes. We're seeing them doing things to protect their families. We're seeing them do things, being active in their role and not being necessarily victims, but survivors. Whereas we see during Hurricane Katrina, images of African-Americans being depicted as victims.
What about like a time where like the world is like flourishing or a certain part of the country is flourishing?
Even in those times, then we just go back to the regular stereotypes of just African-Americans being poverty stricken. You know, one of the most prolific stereotypes of like Black mothers is the Black welfare queen. When we know statistically the number one group that actually takes advantage of welfare are actually white Americans, because there's just more of them. There's statistically more of them in this country. So we see that oftentimes, even when things are flourishing, people will turn around and say, well, look at Asian Americans, they're doing really great. Or depending on where we're at politically with whatever country, it could be, for example, like in the 80s, it really started with the murder of Vincent Chin, where Japanese automakers were really just sort of outperforming American auto market. And so there was a lot of animosity towards Asian Americans and Japanese Americans, but Vincent Chin, who was Chinese, was targeted by a couple of Michigan auto workers who actually killed him. So we see that even in times of flourishing, that those stereotypes still are very pervasive and they still happen often. And we see them, whether it's through the news media or even through like our entertainment media too.
Dr. Ali says that despite the presence of racial stereotypes in news and entertainment media, social commentary could also be found, for example, in the 2017 film Get Out.
So the Jordan Peele was the director. It's about this African-American man, Black man, who has a white girlfriend, and she invites him to her home, and it turns out to be like the biggest nightmare. It turns out to be like this place where the white girlfriend is using, you know, she dates Black men and then brings them to her home, and then they're like, you know, kidnapped and like pretty much like sold into slavery. So I wanted to show, because there's an image in that, and you know, Jordan Peele doesn't make a big deal out of it. I don't think he makes a big deal out of it. What he does is that he just introduces this image of this Asian man sitting in the back bidding on African Americans. And I think it's such an interesting image, because oftentimes when we think of white supremacy, we just think it has a white face, but really white supremacy is sort of systemic. It's more than just, it's the reason why when people say, well, can it be police brutality if a Black officer is beating a Black person? Well, no, it's the system that's broken. It's a system that is entrenched in white supremacy. And so I think that image of Jordan Peele had of the Asian man bidding on the African-American man, it's interesting because you've got somebody who is also an ethnic minority, is also a minority, has dealt with types of discrimination, at least ethnically have dealt with discrimination, but the discrimination is different. There's a different type of discrimination. So this idea of like these white supremacist norms that are entrenched in our society, that are entrenched in our culture, you know, Asian Americans also take advantage of that too. They can. Like when we talk about these things, we want to make sure that it's not just, you know, news media, but we're seeing it all over the place. We're seeing it in our entertainment. And even like laws and policies that are created really to, they hurt African Americans. They don't necessarily hurt Asian Americans in the same way. That's not to say that we don't deal with discrimination. Of course, post 9/11, people that look like me, people that are Middle Eastern, have been dealing with a lot. But again, not systemic. It's not a constant like issue. I don't. I give my students this example to my journalism class. When I get pulled over by a police officer, I'm just worried about the ticket. But if I was Black, I would be worrying about a whole other layer of a lot of things, right? There's a whole other bunch of stuff you have to worry about. So there's certainly a difference. And as an Asian woman, I live with a certain type of privilege that my African-American counterpart would not live with. And understanding those privileges and how those privileges are really, how those privileges are sort of separate and denigrate one group versus another.
Ash and Dr. Lee's programs both take place on Monday, January 18th at 10 a.m. on the Symposium platform as a part of EMU's 35th annual MLK celebration. You can pre-register for these programs and others being offered throughout the day at emich.edu/MLK. This episode was written by yours truly, Kayla Trefill, and produced by Ashley Bueller and Ronya Kabansag. To listen to more episodes of our podcast, visit easternecho.com. The podcast section can be reached via email at podcast@easternecho.com. Thanks for listening, and as always, be sure to tune in for the next episode.